I have to affect a French accent to pronounce our first reading and the author of it, so forgive me for those of you who speak French and say, Nathan, that is not how they say it. So our first reading is from Jacques Luceron. How's that? And we're going to learn more about, I'm going to call him Jack, in the sermon. And it will be read by our worship associate, Peggy Homer.
Barely 10 days after the accident blinded me, I made the first discovery. The only way I can describe it is in clear and direct words. I had completely lost the sight of my eyes. I could not see the light of the world anymore, yet the light was still there. It was there. Try to imagine what a surprise that must have been for a boy not yet 8 years old. All the world around me was convinced I had lost my sight forever. But I found it again in another place. I found it myself. This was something new, you understand. All the more because it contradicted everything that those who have eyes believe. The source of light is not in the outer world. The light dwells where life also dwells, within ourselves. That was the first discovery. The second discovery came almost immediately afterwards. There was only one way to see the inner light, and that was to love. When I was overcome with sorrow, when I let anger take hold of me, when I envied those I saw, the light immediately decreased. Sometimes it went out completely. Then I became blind. But this blindness was a state of not loving anymore, of sadness. It was not the loss of one's eyes.
And our second reading is one of the healing stories told in all four of the Gospels. And I was interested to discover this week that this story, which has to do with sight, is the only miracle in the entire Bible that occurs in stages, gradually, rather than instantly. The only one. And that is probably true, I think, of our experience, that we discover things over time, rather than instantly. And it comes from the Gospel of Mark, and it will be read by Howard Teibel.
They came to Bethesda. Some people brought a blind man to the Rabbi Jesus and begged him to touch him. So he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. And when he had put saliva on his eyes and laid his hands on him, he asked him, "Can you see anything?" And the man looked up and said, "I can see people, but they look like trees walking." And then Jesus laid his hands on eyes again, and he looked intently, and his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly.
So I want us to imagine it as the 1920s, the late 1920s. And Jacques, or Jack, he was a kid who was intoxicated by life. He was always running around, as kids do. He says, "I spent my entire life running, only I was not running to catch something," he says. "I wasn't chasing anything." That's an adult idea, it's not a child's idea. Instead, he says, "I was running to meet everything that I could see." and everything that I could not see. He says, I traveled from discovery to discovery as though I were running a series of relays, a relay race. And that's just a great image. I want us to have that image in mind, an image of life as a series of discoveries, one baton to the next, okay? And even when Jack was young, he was captivated by light. On his fourth birthday, he remembers running along the sidewalk, running toward a triangle of light that he saw in the distance, and it was reflected from the sun on a pool of water far up ahead on the sidewalk. And he says, I remember being projected toward this light, chasing after it, drawn by it, and he's waving his arms and he's running his legs, crying out as he ran, as only a four-year-old can, I am now 4 years old. I am Jacques. Often, he would spend hours watching light fall over the buildings. He would have loved this room where the light comes in. Even the darkness, he says, held light for him. And if you close your eyes, just try this, just close your eyes, and you can still see light, you can see shapes, you can see around you. There's movement. Then, one Easter holiday, his family was returning to Paris from a rented country home, and Jack was just about to turn 8 years old. And he was overtaken by a sad premonition. He was looking and watching the light in the garden behind the home, and Jack began to cry. And his mother saw him, and she went up to him and said, you know, what's the matter, Jacques? What's wrong? And he answered, I fear, Mommy, I am never going to see this garden again. 3 weeks later, it is September, and Jack is back at school, and he's back in the classroom. And do you know how clear and distilled the light in September can be? Those beautiful days? That's how it was that morning. It was clear. It was bright. And the light was coming in through the windows. And Jack and his classmates had spent the first part of the morning on their lessons, and then it was time for their break. And being 8-year-olds and 7-year-olds, there was excitement. There's running in the classroom. There's running to the light outside. And in that bustle, Jack, who was captivated by light, he was intoxicated by life. Jack is bumped by another student, and he hits his head on the corner of a desk, and he injures both of his eyes. And because it is 1933, and the medicine is not up to what it is now, on that day, Jack discovered. Remember that relay of discoveries. Jack discovered that his eyes were injured beyond repair and that he was blind. But, and I want us to hear this, but this did not mean that Jack could not see. He says, this new sight did not come to me instantly. And now remember the reading that Howard read for us, how sight comes gradually. In the days after the injury, he says, I still wanted to use my eyes the ways that I had before. And when I discovered that I couldn't, there was a void in me. There was a darkness in me. But finally, 10 days later, folks, 10 days, I knew that I was looking in the wrong way, Jack says, 7 years old. He says, I discovered that the light had not departed from me, and instead, the light was inside me. A light that grew brighter and more luminous when I loved the life that I had left. And conversely, that light dimmed when I felt anger or sorrow. And now I'm sure we know exactly how Jack feels because he is speaking our language. 8 years later, at the age of 16, Jack would use this inner light to be a recruiter and a leader for the French resistance during World War II. 16 years old. And he would hold on to this light when in 1943 he and his comrades were imprisoned and interrogated by the Gestapo. And he would hold on to it still when they were shipped to the concentration camps, and where in the darkness of cells and in the darkness of wondering would they ever be free, would they ever live, Jack survived long enough to hear with his sharp hearing General Patton's troops outside the gates 15 months later, and he was free. Jack would hold on to this inner light when, after liberation, he went to college and he got his PhD in philosophy, and he became a professor in Paris and then in Hawaii. And he would hold on to this light through his life when he sat down to the keyboard and he wrote those words that Peggy read for us. These words in a book that I commend to you called And There Was Light. It was said of Jack that his inner sight was so strong that he could size up a person by standing next to them. He would know if they were sad or angry or anxious. Imagine that. And it was said that if you walked with Jack down a country road where there was trees on the other side, just imagine a road, and he's holding your arm, that he could point to you where each tree was. And he could tell you how thick the tree was, how full the branches were, how heavy the leaves were. It's amazing, isn't it? But I share Jacques' story, and here let me thank Maureen Gormley for pointing it to me, for us not to be amazed by this guy, as if his ability was something that we don't have. Because when we put someone up a pedestal, we think we can't reach them. But he is us. And this morning, and as I've been thinking about the story, I am drawing a line from us in this room to Jacques. Across oceans, across time, asking along the way, how is your sight? How is your sight as a person, as a friend, as a spouse, as a child? And how is our sight as a church, as a community, as a town, as a country, as a culture? I want to ask, are there things to which you and I are blind? I want to ask, as you're waking up into your life in the morning, you get into the car, and you know how you back down the driveway, and you can't quite see around, what is that called? The blind spot. Are there blind spots for us? And when you think about that, I want to ask, does the inner light in you radiate out enough so that others will see it? In other words, do you have enough love in your life? Or is that light dim? In other words, does the shadow of worry or envy or sorrow or ego obstruct the things that you see? And thinking of these questions all week, all month, thinking of Jacques, I found myself, it came to me, thinking of that line that we heard the choir sing. I hope that we heard it. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found. And what is that last line? What is that last line? Was blind, but now I see. Those words written, I hope we remember, by John Newton, describing his journey from slave trader to abolitionist Christian minister. It took him 31 years to take that journey, gradual, just like Howard read for us. But John went from something like blindness to redemption. And that line, you know, it rings in my ears. It appears when I close my eyes, as I answer the questions that I ask and I think about where the blindness has been in my life and in your life and in the culture that we live in. And I started to think about the social movements that you and I have glimpsed over our lives and behind us. And I think how gradually, like the blind man in the story, and only in some places we should say, how we see women as full participants in society. I think of my little girl who's 8, and that she can have more in life if she wants to than being a mom and being married. And I think how gradually, and only in some places, do we see people of color more fully. And how gradually, and only in some places, actually very few places, do we see our gay and lesbian and transgendered friends as real people and not as a banner or an issue to accept or reject. There has been something like blindness with these issues, has there not? And become clearer to us over time. And when we think about the progress that we've made, are we thinking that the blindness is behind us now? Are we thinking that we are done yet? In other words, is our vision completely realized? So I'm asking myself, what don't I see now out beyond these walls? And I'm thinking of our friends who are protesting down in Dewey Square and in New York City. And on a topic that I'm going to preach more about in 2 weeks on November 6th. And I'm praying to myself that the fact that my own retirement and your retirements and the church's endowment does not blind us from asking with these folks, well, what is fair? Is it fair that the richest 400 people in our country have more assets than the 150 million poorest combined? Is that fair? Is it right that our biggest corporations can contribute huge sums of money in politics so that legislation will be enacted in their favor? Is it fair? And we ask, of course, knowing that by and large, you and I are the privileged in this room. That in some cases, these questions will cause us to have what I describe as the pew squirm. And I love you, and you know that. But let me say this, that maybe that is not a bad thing. Because with our new vision, we see that church is sometimes, as it was on Friday for Bill, church is sometimes to comfort the afflicted and the mourning. And sometimes church is about afflicting the moments and the places that we're comfortable. And lest you think that I get to stand up here in this robe, in this pulpit, and ask all of the questions. Lest you think that I get to point to the speck in other people's eyes without looking and noticing the log in my own, which is another great reference from Scripture. Can I confess to you here my own blindness? It happens all of the time, and I discovered it again this week. Remember that relay of discoveries, that baton of discoveries. When in a heightened state of distraction, I am trying to find the right words for this service or that prayer or for Bill's service or for this sermon, and I have my laptop in the living room, and the TV's on, the kids are there. I'm emailing about that project, trying to assemble this search committee. I didn't see my daughter, Ella, pointing out the window of the living room. "Dad," she says, and I didn't hear her. I didn't see her because my head is down. I'm at the keyboard. "Dad, Dad." And me distracted now, hearing her call louder and louder. "What?" I say, "I am busy. What do you want?" And she's saying, now hurt, "Never mind. Forget it." And me putting the computer down, going after her. She's up in her room. I pass the window that she pointed out to, shouting from the bottom of the stairs, "What is it, honey? What is it?" And upstairs from her room, a small voice, "I just wanted to show you something outside. I just wanted to show you how the color on the leaves had changed." Well, do you know how sight sometimes comes to us instantly? "Come, show me," I say. "Come and help me see." So, my question for us is, what and who, because they are there, are asking you, "Come and see"? How are you blind? And each of us has a spot. Where is the light for you? What do you need to discover, to discover? And we ask these questions because the hymn gives us good news. It reminds us that there is amazing grace where there is amazing light. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound, that saved a wretch like me. Not a soul, but the times that we were broken. I once was lost, but now am found. And what is the last line? Was blind, but now I see. Let us rise and sing. Number 205.